So welcome to the e-com growth show, where we cut through the chaos of e-com growth and show you how to build a business that scales and supports the life that you actually want. I'm your host, Brittany, former boutique owner turned growth strategist for e-com owners like yourself. And today I'm joined by co-founders of Shopanova and Bloom, Robbie Switzer and Danny Stafford. We created this podcast to pull back the curtain on what's really working to grow Shopify brands to consistent 100K plus months without burnout or guesswork. Whether you're getting traction or scaling fast, this show is designed to help you simplify, focus, and grow with purpose.
What's up, guys? If you've ever felt overwhelmed by your to-do list, dropped the ball on something important, or wondered if it's finally time to hire help, this episode is 100% for you, because we're talking about when to hire, who to hire, how to hire, and ultimately end up with a team that helps you grow instead of just like creating more work and more chaos. So Brittany,
hey girl.
Let's go back to some of your experiences, whether it's through coaching a client or even just with businesses you've owned or operated in yourself. When did you first know it was time to hire someone?
Well, this wasn't my best bet because I learned through trial by fire type thing. But with my boutique, I didn't have enough time because I was shipping so much to go live. And at the time, I was going live to sell clothing. So I didn't have time to make more money. So I was like, I obviously have to change what I'm doing. And the first position I hired out for was like, she was like part-time, a customer, local friend type thing. And she oversaw shipping.
You know,
was the first thing.
Dude.
Freaking, if you don't have time to make more money and you're a business owner, you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't go live today because I have to ship all this stuff. And yeah, so that was my awakening.
I mean, for e-commerce store owners, should that like just be the first thing you upload, like packing orders? It's just so time consuming. And it's like, most people can do it. Like it's not terribly hard. It eats up your whole day though, if you're getting a substantial amount of orders.
Yeah. If you're fulfilling yourself, typically the first thing I tell people to hand off is shipping. Number two is customer service. And then number three, if they're doing like $80,000 a month, I have a pretty strict policy of you should not be touching your product unless you're taking photos in it. So any form of fulfillment when people get the product in, checking it, tagging it, listing it on Shopify, all of those things can be delegated.
Yeah. Yeah, because those are pretty rinse and repeat processes. And
yeah, you don't need a special zone of genius to do those things. So that was typically my first thing. And then customer service, I typically recommend delegating sooner rather than later because a lot of people feel like the emotional toll. So a lot of owners are just too close to it. Mm-hmm. And they could be going through their day, having a good day, and then they get one crappy customer service email and they're shot.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you can delegate that out to someone else, they're not emotionally tied to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say, hey, like, as you send the customer service email replies, take note of the question in a Google Doc, create your answer, copy and paste it. So now there's a sustainable system that you can delegate out.
Totally. Yeah, that's super good. This question, Dan, I feel like could be directed toward you, but have you ever waited too long to hire? And if so, kind of what are the consequences of that?
Dude, I don't think I have.
Okay, well, what about...
I'm always bullish on hiring.
Have you ever hired too soon?
You know what, Rob? Ooh, yes, I think so. I think so. And that can be a bummer because what I've done is hired too soon and there was no system or process for the person to follow. And I was like expecting them to be the ones to like know what to do and come up with their own systems. Which works if you're hiring like a management level position, right? Or executive level, they should be able to do their own shit. But when you're hiring just a normal employee, but you don't have it outlined what you need, like that's when I've hired too soon. And you know me, Rob, I'm not a big systems guy, am I? I don't love the systems. So then it's like you try to build the systems for this person. And then it's a lose-lose. And it's like, hey, this person's not very valuable. And it's like, well, yes, because we hired them too soon before we had the system created for them to follow and execute on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's super good. What is it like? Ezra Firestone has a good thing where he's like, when he hires somebody, it's like, hey, the first two times you shadow me, like you watch me do it. The next two times we do it together. And then the last two times, like I'm watching you do it. And then you're just good to go on your own. I feel like that's a decent framework for being able to ramp people up. Because maybe even in that process, you can like fully flesh out the SOPs. Because I think when a lot of people, they go to hire someone, that's like when they, it's not like they have it all mapped out perfectly when they go to hire them. It's kind of like, shoot, I need to teach somebody, what is the SOP on this specifically? And I feel like that process of just bringing somebody up into the role is actually where the documentation of that SOP gets started. Dude, at least in the talking with me, that's moving and growing. Like if you've been around for a decade and you have this all in the handbook, like no big deal. But a lot of the companies we're talking to, it's like they started it themselves and they're just like each month they're developing new strategic activities.
The more you're talking, the more you're jostling my memory, because there was a time where we did hire too late. And it was when we grew really, 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 really fast over COVID. And we didn't hire an operations manager soon enough.
Yeah.
And it's like that we didn't have a bunch of systems in place for the whole company. And all of a sudden we had 40 employees and you and I trying to manage everyone with not really managers in place. When really a good operations person could have come in, set up all the tiers and structures that, you know, Josh did. But we waited a little too long on that one specifically. Now that I'm looking at you right here now, being honest, that one could have come earlier.
Yeah. Well, it's tricky though, too, because some of that, at least like putting managers in place, like that's a role that creates a little bit of friction. Like it almost slows down. So you need to have a little bit of a strike a good balance there. Because like we have an awesome operator now. We have a COO who's like keeps everything super clean. But sometimes he wants us to slow down. The good ideas that bake all the money. So like you have to like strike a balance there too,
for sure.
And I think that's probably why it exploded so quick, was there wasn't a lot of cross.
No one.
Well, checks and balances going on.
No one pumping the brakes. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you're right. There was a good learning lesson where, you know, maybe we wouldn't have suffered the heartaches of growing too quick had we had some more of that in place.
Yeah.
Brittany, so you kind of spoke about, you know, here are some roles where if I was e-com brand, I was hiring right off the bat, like right away, get rid of customer service, packing orders, anything that has to do with bringing in inventory, get it listed on the site, touching product. What are some roles that the founder should like never let go of or be very reluctant to let go of too soon?
Oh man. So I love this one. It depends on the owner. So there are certain things that bring each individual joy in their business, and it's a part of what fuels them. And for each and every person, it's a little different. So like I had a brand owner, she loves photography. Photography is something you can easily delegate. If I took photography away from her, she would have lost a lot of joy in her business.
Totally.
Not something I touch.
Some people, it's like they started a business so they can take the photos. So they'll take yes.
But everybody's a little different. And then like I had someone else that like shopping and curating the collections brings her joy. Mm-hmm. And like I said, when we brought up the topic of like, hey, let's delegate, it took up a good chunk of her time, but it just brought her so much joy in her business. I was like, hey, let's not delegate this one out. So the top one thing is like, identify the things that bring you joy and energy and take away your joy and energy.
Yeah.
So that's individualistic for each person. And then I'm pretty passionate about marketing.
Mm-hmm.
we run into this a lot where we are, that people hand off their marketing too soon, or they don't find what works for their company yet when they're really, really earlier stages, like below 50K is typically where people are like, okay, I just want to like hand off my marketing, but they haven't found out yet for themselves what helps them go to their goals, if that makes sense. So learning that themselves is typically something I recommend, like, hey, take that on yourself first and then delegate it out is typically, but marketing would probably be another thing, or like those growth tools in your business.
Yeah, like what you said earlier too, of like, find what drains you, find what gives you energy. Because that's something Robbie and I did very early on. It's like, what do we hate doing in the business? And wrote those things all down. And then it's like, boom, there's your first job description. And you know, what's cool about that is you can find someone that loves the things you hate, right? And they're going to do it better than you because it brings them energy. So that's really helped us like from the beginning of writing those things down. Otherwise, if you don't, you find you have a business that kind of drains you and owns you.
Mm-hmm. I will say too, it kind of changes over time. And I can even think specifically back to some of our experiences. Like we blew up, went really big, really quick. And then we suffered a little bit and our company got downsized and we were kind of left feeling a little bit beat up. And I was like, gosh, what just happened? Like all this crazy stuff. Like there's actual like trauma that happened inside of that roller coaster. But I remember like one thing we delegated out was sales calls. And that was super awesome. Like we had a badass sales team. But when we went to rebuild our company in a way that was better than the one that kind of like had all these flaws and cracks and crumbled in a way, it was really cool for everyone to get back into sales calls and like kind of rebuild some confidence, rebuild some leadership. Because also what happens in, at least in a service-based business, kind of what happens in that marketing and sales conversation sets the tone for the entire relationship with the customer. So it was really cool for us as founders to jump into those sales calls. Specifically, Josh and Dan did it more so than I did. But I thought that was really cool as just a way to like rebuild confidence after a little bit of a crazy time inside of the business. But the whole point is what you're delegating, what you're interested in, what you do want to do, what you don't want to do, all of that can kind of change with the seasons of your business year over year. So don't be afraid to let you lock yourself into a box.
Yeah. And for us, like we weren't the best at sales, so we didn't have the confidence. So it's like it felt scarier, like when you can't sell for your own business and you're relying on other people. It almost goes back to what Brittany was saying of like people that don't know their marketing and e-commerce. It's the same thing. You're handing like the biggest pillar of your business off to someone else, hoping they can do it. And if that falls apart and you don't know how, that's going to be a little bit of a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying you have to do it forever, but at least if you know how, you at least know confidently, like, I can market and sell my products if all things fall apart. And that that does bring a lot of security within your business.
Yeah, definitely. And just to echo too, Brittany, what you were saying about the founder should really be very involved with the big levers, like marketing, really knowing their numbers, stuff like that. But the marketing one, I feel like if you don't have like full proof of concept, like a validated product, like it's just so important for the founder to be involved in like developing the fingerprints of the brand. Like, what is the value proposition? Why are people drawn to us? Why are they buying our products? And once you can like establish that, then a good marketer or even an agency or a freelancer can come in and kind of take something that already has traction and really amplify it. But it's really hard to amplify a company before that is in place. And I just think it's really hard to do that unless you're the founder. Otherwise, it's just going to like, why wouldn't they just start their own business if they're going to come in and do all that for you?
I think the biggest thing with that piece is you need to be able to get a quick pulse and pivot.
Yeah.
So when you're doing the marketing yourself, you can see the comments, you can see the emails, you can see the replies, you can see what's working and what's not. in real time so you can shift and pivot quicker. And you're going to care more about that than just a random person that you're bringing onto your team. Mm-hmm. So that kind of like quick interaction and quick loop feedback so you can pivot and make better decisions is like just so crucial. And then someone can replicate that and make it a little better. But that original, like, I need to get feedback for the proof of concept is like really huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like keeping these conversations fairly big picture, but a lot of people love kind of some nitty gritty stuff. So we don't have to beat this to death. But like when it comes to tactics and process, how do you write a good job description?
Oh, dude, it's so easy now. It's so easy. No one has excuse for this one now. You go to ChatGPT or any AI language model and you say, I'm looking to hire this person with these responsibilities. List out the things you hate to do in your business. Say, write me a job description and then go post it to Indeed and start getting on calls.
It's so easy. And it's actually really good. I love too, where it's like your criteria is, these are the things I'm looking to offload. These are the things that are sucking my energy. You know, how can I construct a role around alleviating some of this? And it'll like be pretty nice.
I feel like even before you get there though, a lot of business owners struggle with decision fatigue. Mm. So it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many roles I could hire. I am so overwhelmed with so many things. So like step one where I like to keep people is they do a time audit and an energy audit. So typically what I recommend is, hey, for 3 business days, track and audit your time and then track and audit your energy. So how long do different things in your day take you? And then how do you feel when you do those things? What's giving you energy or what's taking you energy? Your first job description can be 1 or 2 things. It can be the things that are sucking up your energy and not really adding value to the business, or they're taking up most of your time but not adding to the value of the business. So that's kind of, and a lot of times they can actually have a lot of overlap too, but that's typically like, hey, find that sweet spot. And then just having an alignment with this skill set.
Mm-hmm.
But like typically your social media people are more extroverted or creative, depending on the person. There's also people who can be more analytical, but most like social media content creators or what have you are more extroverted, creative. That person is going to like do terrible in a shipping position because your shippers are typically your introverts. They like routine. You want someone with like borderline perfectionistic tendencies a little bit, but they like redundancy, they like control, and they're typically your introverts. So sometimes just making sure like, hey, is this more of an introverted role or an extroverted role is something that I also like to kind of pair together too.
And where do you find good candidates?
It depends. So I know you guys love LinkedIn.
Yeah, we do.
But I typically like to start with like your, it depends on the business, but I've found a lot of success actually hiring from like your customer base or referrals. So a lot of times like posting the job description on your Instagram or your stories, things like that, and getting candidates that way, that can get a little tricky depending on the business or like if you have someone who is a little sour and exits your company, things like that. But I've seen that just have a lot of success for like local boutiques and smaller businesses is just using your social profiles to find someone originally.
Yeah. And then obviously if you need someone in person, there's that whole local thing. And
Yeah. We've had success with LinkedIn. It's easy. Also Indeed, just job posting sites that people are looking for. You can select your area, but you're right. I think if we could, like, especially when we are hiring locally, it's just like referral network that way. So if it's your first hire, you need someone locally, like a referral is going to be probably the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And smaller businesses, some boutique owners, this doesn't work 100% of the time. So like take it, you know, and filter it through your own lens and your own company. But if they already like your business, they're already a fan, they already know your business model, and they're already invested, they're typically going to be really excited to work with you, which is just a great point to start at. And then sometimes if you don't have the funds to make an official hire, like people have even done like boutique credit, like giving someone credit for their business to shop if they're like a frequent shopper in exchange for shipping for a couple hours a week or something like that is like a, you know, like a practical win-win. I don't recommend that long term. And I don't know, I'm not a financial advisor at all, but that's something I've seen boutiques do at the very, very early stages when they don't have a lot of money originally.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, so like once the interview process gets started, one thing we like to do is obviously ask all the questions to qualify them, whether or not they're capable of the job, but then actually give them a test. Like if you're hiring a graphic designer, say like, hey, imagine I'm running a Mother's Day sale. Here's my logo. Here's my branding. Look at my site. Like show me what you would create. Show me an email you would design. Show, you know, and actually just test them out. Doesn't have to be too crazy. But how they interact with you, the questions they ask, how quickly they accomplish the task, how thorough it is, that just tells you a lot about the person. So we always like to like do the skills qualification. We do a test. And then above and beyond that, we do interviews even just for like culture fit. But I'm curious, what are some of your guys' favorite interview questions? Probably not on like the skills side of things, because that'll vary position to position. But like, if you're just trying to fill somebody out, see how they're going to be to work with, like, what are some of those favorite questions you like to ask people?
I'll go first, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
It's fine by me.
Yes.
I'm usually not very structured at all. I could probably be more structured, but I typically am assessing for culture, because Josh does all the technical side questions where he'll screen that out. So typically I'm literally just having a conversation with the person of like just a culture fit. Am I, it's a lot of times an energy thing for me too. Like, do I enjoy talking to this person? Do I feel like, you know, they're going to be easygoing? Do I feel like they're going to be adaptable? But one thing we always say is like, we like to hire for culture and train for skill. Obviously, you want people to have skill, but say someone has 10 out of 10 culture, 7 out of 10 skill. The other person has 10 out of 10 skill, 7 out of 10 culture. We'll hire the culture one over that person and train them up to what we need, where we need them to be from a skill perspective. But dude, typically I'm just asking them like what makes them passionate about this role, our company, stuff like that, and then just have a pretty lighthearted conversation.
Yeah, it's good to do it that way, because it's like, this is who you're going to be spending your time with. Like, if we can't show up and enjoy our time together, like, it's probably not going to work well together. At least that's how we run our company. So it's like, if it feels like we're jiving and we're being productive, that's a good one. A question I like to ask people too is like, tell me about a work experience or an environment that you actually hated. And then they kind of list out, you know, some of the things that they really dislike. And it just very quickly shines a light on the things they have value for. Because the opposite is very much true. Like, oh, I hate when I get micromanaged. It's like, okay, this person, you know, wants to have some like freedom over their decisions and be accountable in that way. That's one that I like. Brittany, any interview questions that you ask every single time? Favorites?
Probably not every single time, but one thing I wanted to kick back to Dan is, you're like, okay, I interview for culture, but you guys are like a larger company at this point with over a decade of experience, right? So you can interview for like culture, and also it just sounds cool. But for a solopreneur who's making like their first or second hire, how would you define or come up with what culture even is for them? Like, what would that look like?
I would say, do you enjoy talking to this person, because you're going to be working with them every... I'd say it's even more important for your first hire, because you're going to be very directly working with them closely.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's hard because it is more of a feeling. Like, I remember even when you and I chatted, Brittany, it's like I could tell very quickly you were like 10 out of a 10 culture fit. I could tell you're very emotionally intelligent, self-aware, you know, positive, would take ownership in like 15 minutes, right? So it's like, you have to find that your first hire, like, can I be around this person every day? Even if you don't even know why you would or wouldn't, if you don't have culture defined yet, just check your instincts of like, do I enjoy this interview and talking with this person?
I feel like culture gets more sterile the bigger you are. Like it has to be more documented, has to be more reinforced. Like when you're small, it's actually easy. Just hire people that can do the job and that you enjoy being around. And that kind of naturally comes out of that. I feel like it actually gets a little bit more challenging the more people you get involved, and you really got to like develop your core values and stuff like that. So that's a great one. As we look towards wrapping up, there's a couple other areas I wanted to hit on. Red flags and lessons. So get that on your radar. And then I kind of want to end with, just kind of leadership, how to get people to step into taking ownership rather than it just being like a job, you know, even kind of on the culture thing. How do you maintain culture as the team grows? So we'll end there. But first, before we go there, what's a hiring mistake that you've made or that you've seen be made? Or red flags?
I think it's funny. We've been talking about this, but it's like, if it's not a hell yes, then it's a hell no. And a lot of times it's really hard in the interview process. Even if you spend hours with the person, give them a test, you don't fully know until they're inside the company. But I'd say once they're in the company, that first week you can tell.
Yeah.
Like that first week you can freaking tell.
Week five isn't going to be any better.
No. And the thing is, that's one of the biggest mistakes we've made over and over again, is just holding on for too long, even when you know it's not going to work out. And then it lets the rest of the team down, right? And it's not fair to the other people that are showing up and doing their job. But, dude, no one likes to fire someone or let someone go. It's just you want to see the best in people and, like, pour into people and train them up. But at the end of the day, the saying remains quite true, Bobby. Hire slow, fire fast. I actually like this. What was it? It's like hire fast, promote faster, fire fastest, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that's good. Yeah, and for that reason, we do. I think everybody should do this, like a 30-day probationary period, where it's like, hey, this seems like a good fit. Seems like we'd work great together. Seems like you're capable of doing the job, et cetera, et cetera. Let's kick things off as if we're going to be, you know, working together for the long run, but we're going to do that with a 30-day probationary period, where it's like we can feel each other out. And at the end of that 30 days, we can kind of like make our long-term commitment then. But if anything comes up in that 30 days for either one of us, like we can kind of just set the expectation that we would part ways if it's not going well. That makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, I was going to say a mistake I've made, and this is, it's not exactly what Dan was saying, but like it's the personality to role fit.
Mm.
So sometimes I've hired just on personality, like because we clicked, but then like you can get along with someone and them be different than you is something that I've learned. So I kind of like I said, like hiring your shipping team. Like I've run into it personally and with the businesses I work with, they're like, there's this person in my shipping team and all she does is talk and she doesn't ship. I'm like, great, put her in sales or put her in marketing. But she was miserable because she didn't like redundancy. And like, she did get along with everybody, but like, she didn't do the job well. So just making sure there's like personality fit alignment is something I typically am coaching entrepreneurs through. And knowing yourself, I think self-awareness is just such a huge part of it. And that's why I do like the audits, like the energy audits, and like knowing who you are as a leader, like your leadership style, how hands-on you are, or like your controlling tendencies is a good thing to have self-awareness around. How much you can trust and what that looks like, or what systems and accountability you need to trust to hire the right kind of person is definitely a part of it. And then another thing is doing, this is like when I'm first starting to work with people, originally when we're looking at team and assessing team, I kind of look at businesses as puzzles, and it's just really making sure like each unique puzzle piece is in the right space and at the right time is kind of what I look at it as. And sometimes someone like they're just not in the right puzzle piece. And if you just shift them 90 degrees, it's a good fit. So that's other things I look at. If they're like auditing your team for like sour apples. So sometimes we can have someone and they're good at their role, but then eventually we're like, okay, we grew. It's not a culture fit. And just kind of like having those tough conversations or letting those people go is just so crucial. Cause I've run into it where business owners have like a team, a small team, and there's like one of the five people on their team who just like is gossiping or is always has a negative attitude or doesn't like you as the owner. And it just drags like the rest of the culture down. And soon as they're removed, it's just crazy how big of a difference it can make is another thing I've seen. So like as far as like mistakes made or things I've seen, or that's kind of what I've run into with coaching.
So good. I can't tell you how relieving it feels when you like get somebody out who's been contributing to like a toxic culture. It's like you don't even realize the toll it takes on you and your team until you actually finally get them off board. And it's like, it feels so nice. So yeah, that's a really good one. Let's work towards wrapping up. How do you make sure your team feels ownership and not just employment?
I think releasing control is such a huge part of it. So I worked with one particular client a few years ago, Jen, and she had a brick and mortar team. She was scaling online and she wanted to do everything because she thought she could do everything. So her hands were in a lot of different pots and she didn't actually surrender a lot of control to her team. So she felt overwhelmed, burnt out because she was doing everything. And then her team felt kind of like undermined and not empowered because she wasn't equipping them to do everything. So I kind of helped her get like systems in place, SOPs, some structure from like a management level. She had someone in between her and the team. And her bringing her team into her goals, having incentives, incorporating them in the process and surrendering and giving them trust, they picked up, because they were the right team, they picked up that baton and they ran with it. And she thought, she was like, I'm delegating this or that, and I don't even like doing it. How are they going to like doing it? But it was the right person for the right job. And it was one of their skill sets. They loved it, right? So she felt less burned out, less overwhelmed. And they felt more empowered and more capable. And that tremendously helped grow her business. Just the team dynamic alone. So that's some recommendations that I typically have.
I love that. Dan, anything to add to that?
Dude, I think she nailed that one.
Yeah, awesome. Cool, guys. Well, business can be tricky at times. It can also be super fun. And it's really fun when you're not having to do it all alone. So if you guys ever have a question, you guys want us to cover a certain topic on the podcast, hit us up on social. Or let's be real friends. Like, join one of our groups and let's work together. And there's all types of information on that. Check out the show notes. But until next time, guys, we will catch you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ecom Growth Show, where clarity replaces chaos and strategy fuels freedom. If today's episode sparked any idea or gave you a clear next step, we'd love for you to subscribe, share it with a fellow brand owner, and leave a review so more entrepreneurs can grow with intention, not overwhelm. For more resources and real talk on scaling your Shopify brand the smart way, follow us on Instagram @ShopaNova. Until next time, keep growing with purpose.